Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. All right, welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schankelberg, and Andre Kleiner's on the line. Hey, Andre.
Hello, Fred. How's it going?
Oh, pretty good. It's Friday. You must be, when we're recording this, it's Friday anyway. It might come out on Friday.
So happy Friday then.
Yeah, happy Friday. You know, one of the things that I find happens on Friday, especially when I worked in an office, you know, with a larger team and a bunch of other projects going on within the company, is it seemed like Friday afternoon was the time to call and ask a question about an urgent problem. We have this new component or this thing has fallen. Do you see that? Do you get that?
Yeah, yeah. It's a known phenomenon. People want to kind of wrap things up before the weekend, and then suddenly, oh, I need to ask this, or I need to finish this. And yeah, it's a known phenomenon.
Yeah, I used to drive
spike
my
inactivity in on Friday afternoon.
Well, I think part of it is driven by that in corporations. I mean, we pretty much live by going to meetings. It seems like it's run by meetings, and very, very few successful managers I found schedule meetings on Friday afternoon. And so people are back at their desk. They have all these action items they got to get done, and if you can hand it off to somebody else, it's a quick phone call or an email, and it's Friday afternoon is when it happens. But one of the things I wanted to ask you about is that, and I get it in my consulting, is that Friday afternoon call, which may come any day of the week, of we just saw something different, or we have this new component, or we have this new material. It's usually new is a part of the description. And they're like, how do you know anything about this? How reliable is it? You know, it's
what acceleration model we should apply for this particular type of technology and to run a successful test? Yeah, yeah, it's becoming pretty common, especially with all the technologies basically evolving faster and faster.
Oh, definitely. So let's talk about that. I'm going to take a real quick break so we can do a quick message, and then we'll come back and we'll dive into that dealing with new technology type stuff.
Hi, it's Fred here. Just a quick note on improving your reliability engineering professional development. Join Ascendo Reliability and opt in to the weekly update email list. You'll receive a weekly rundown of all the new content added to the Ascendo Reliability site. Click through the items of interest, including articles, podcasts, webinars, and more. Quick, easy, smart. Join Ascendo Reliability at ascendoreliability.com/go/membership.
All right. So, I mean, I think one of my thoughts here is that I hesitate only because if I ask you if you had any interesting questions like that of, you know, here's something new, a new technology, we probably cross into the non-disclosure arena real quick because it's new and it's coming up. It's in a new product or whatever. But let's talk about it in general.
Yeah. Basically how you deal with it if some new type of component or like I can give you example in the automotive business, like display screens. They change really fast. Different technology, capacitive, resistive technology. I mean, how they respond to your touch, and it's like every year there's something new. So if you need to test those units, those displays, how do you go about it? Unfortunately, often people kind of fall back on certain standards, testing standards.
Which are, not, you know, of technology. Yeah, 20-year-old technology that they were written for. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, we need to do, I don't know, 1,000 hours of high temperature exposure at 85 degrees C or 90 degrees C.
Right.
And yeah, it's all great. But the thing is, since the test is accelerated test, and you have no idea what's the acceleration model for that particular technology, you might be over-testing or under-testing your parts. That's often the problem.
Well, you know, I think that comes about largely because there's another phenomena besides having new materials and components, technologies, vendors, configurations, all this stuff that's coming at us is, you mentioned it, it's faster. It's, we just don't have time. Product life cycles are shorter. Somebody comes up with a new display technology and they want to rush it into the new product model, which is due out in 6 months. And you've never, like OLED, organic light emitting diodes, there's not a lot of technology or a lot of literature and long-term studies on it, because I think the actual technology is not that young, but it's not been used in cars and medical devices and other places in any large scale. So it just doesn't have a lot of research built into it.
Yeah, and it takes a long time to study technology. I mean, just think of something really simple like solder joints. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've been studying tin lead for many, many years and still kind of getting some contradicting results. And then we switch to lead-free, which again, it's not nearly... it's not a new technology, it's just a new material, and then we're probably going to be studying for another 20, 30 years.
Well, it wasn't just that we got, you know, sack solder, just one tin lead one. It ended up being like 15 or 16 different lead-free solders for different niches, and each one behaves slightly differently.
And, sometimes significantly differently.
Right.
And now we're looking at something like a automotive display, and those displays are different, like I said, using new technology, different technologies, and the different layers, different materials, different polarizers. So how do you deal with that? I mean,
well,
from a reliability standpoint.
So let's try to answer that question. Let's use the displays as an idea. You know, so I think you hinted at the idea of, you know, just run high temperature and then not knowing what the acceleration factor is that goes back to the basic idea of, well, what's going to fail, right? So if we create an analog, we have an analog odometer or an analog display on our dashboard, the older cars, right? It was just wire basically off a sensor. And it gave us a speedometer gauge. Very, very basic. And then we digitized it. Well, the old style one would fail for wear. The mechanical system would wear out, couplings and linkages and so on, and rust and corrosion, those kinds of factors. As soon as we put sensors on it and did it all digitally, the types of failure mechanism shifted, changed.
Oh, changes completely, yeah.
Right. And so running 100,000 mile simulation on an analog system might have told us what we needed to know. Did it work out as constructed, and did it work for a long time? And we can monitor the wear. Whereas, what would you measure on a digital system? And so I think that's an extreme example. But when you're talking about a display, and I just want the phenomena, the function is I want to see how fast I'm going, right? Although these cars these days, that's the last thing people look at their dashboard, it seems like, especially in the roads around here. They're looking at text messages. They're looking at maps. They're looking at comfort controls, seat adjustments. Everything's on the dashboard. But now I back it up to, well, what's the primary function, right? It's to convey information. And it doesn't matter what technology is under there. Can it actually perform that function? And so there's different lighting conditions, the different environmental stresses, all these different factors are part of that. When it doesn't do it, it fails. So at a very high level,
right,
it's look at the function and then break it down to mechanisms.
Yeah, and that's the main concern of people who design those things. I mean, they it's not that they don't think about reliability, but it's not at the top of their list because obviously they worry about functionality. So that thing performs its function. But again, if we're talking about automotive industry or aerospace, I mean, we need to think about reliability. Even with cell phones and computers, for example, they last a lot longer these days.
Except like for the recent news with all the there's some flaw that affects like every device. It's a security issue more than a reliability issue. But right. They last long.
My first gateway. It was basically obsolete after 6 months. And my desktop I have at home now, I've had it for 5 years and it's still doing its job. And I don't need to replace it. And I hope I won't need to for another few years.
Yeah.
So reliability is important. And again, how do you deal with that? Like when a new technology, I get phone calls from our designers and say, oh, do you have, failure rate for this particular component? Or people who actually were a little more knowledgeable about reliability ask me, do you have a Kaufman-Manson coefficient for plastic? It's like, wow, this is the answer. No, I don't. And neither does anybody else. And the thing is, it's not just for plastic because you need a Kaufman-Manson coefficient for basically a set of materials because it fails because they expand and contract at different rates. It's not just for one material. So we have to face this kind of problems and often we're not equipped to deal with that. So
I disagree there, Andre. I think we are equipped as reliability professionals to deal with it. You have to the solution is not which of our standard tests should we run and how do we interpret it. It's back up and go, what is it I'm trying to answer? What question am I trying? If somebody says, oh, here's a new display technology, is it reliable? You know, I could get out a sledgehammer and break it and say, no, it's not reliable. But that's not a useful answer to that question. And I think we need to start like we typically do when you have the time and luxury is say, well, how does it, what's it supposed to do, right? And how is it likely to fail? What is it we know and don't know? And let's, like a fault tree analysis, let's break that down and then sort out what we need to evaluate.
Yeah, and that's one of the approaches I wanted to discuss because we as reliability professionals have to deal with that, obviously, and we do. It's just we don't know enough, or we don't know as much about the new technology as we know about the older technology. Mm-hmm. So the goal is to basically get the best information we can in the shortest period of time. So, like I said, we're not fully equipped, but we do the best we can. So people often refer to FMEA, so failure modes and effect analysis, which is a good tool. But I tell you, in my personal experience, I have not found it very useful for this purposes, at least the kind of traditional FMEA, because it mostly deals again with functionality. If like in electronics, yeah, if you switch pin one with pin five, what's going to happen?
Right.
But I rarely see things as, okay, potential failure mode is solder joint cracking. What do you do about this?
Right. I ran into an FMEA where it was a low orbit satellite. So one of the features of a low orbit satellite is it moves very fast and it goes from the cold side to the hot side of its orbit very fast. And so it was like, all right, so how does that phenomena, and it was an FMEA question, how does that affect how does that set of stresses cause problems? Well, we all looked at it with about 3 seconds and said, that's a better acceleration factor because it was going from, it was like 200 degrees Celsius change every 30 minutes. It was just amazing.
Pretty good thermal shock. Yeah.
Yeah. It was amazing. And we're like, okay, I think the risk is we don't know how to, we can't even accelerate it on Earth that fast unless we go to a really exotic machine. But what, you know, so then that becomes a prioritization of where to look. But the other tool here is highly accelerated life testing. HALT, let's go force this new thing to fail. And is it in line with what we expected to fail? Or is it a brand new failure mechanism we didn't see? I think that's a good approach.
Yeah, and I think those approaches kind of boils down to the physics of failure. So you mm-hmm. need to basically answer two major questions. One question is what kind of environment your system or your product is going to deal with, and the second question is how do you expect it to fail. And so mm-hmm. if you answer those two questions, I think you already made a lot of progress.
Yeah, and you know, I've said this a number of times in these shows and in writing, is reliability engineering really comes down to that we are asked to answer two questions: what's going to fail and when. And we can't answer the second one until we know the answer to the first. We need to know what's going to fail. So is it a corrosion problem, or is it a wear problem? Is it an electromigration problem? Is it what thermal, you know, delamination? We have so many different ways things can fail. We need to understand what's likely to fail. What's the most, what's going to happen. Now, we tended here in this discussion tended to talk about wear out and long-term type stuff. I want to make sure that we also address a good number of failures occur early in the life of a product, right? It's not assembled correctly. It's got, it's damaged in shipment. It's got a weakness designed into it that it, when it's exposed, like the new iPhone X in cold weather, which I imagine most of this last winter, a lot of people discovered their phones don't work all that well when it's cold.
Yeah, especially if they're closer to the East Coast.
That's right. Yeah. I'm glad I'm in California. We're nice and it's 65 degrees today. So
don't rub it in. It's we're in the negative territory this week.
Yeah, it builds character. It builds character. But, you know, it's some products fail fairly quick. And it's also part of that same basic question is what will fail. So oftentimes with new products and vendors and materials and technologies comes relatively new or brand new assembly techniques. And so they may not be stable yet. They may not have the capability to create robust, solid products. So I think we shouldn't overlook that aspect of it, is make sure that the products are getting work out of the box and what could go wrong there, especially when you scale, when you go up to larger volumes of products. That's in itself is a problem.
You're talking about quality issues, right?
Well, basically, some people call it that. Yeah, some people call it that. But, you know, if a product fails in the field for a customer, I don't care if it's a quality issue or reliability issue or safety issue or whatever. It failed. It costs us money.
It costs money, and it's, I mean, kind of reflects bad on the company. But the thing is, as a reliability professional, I mean, we professionals, we deal mostly with design issues, and that's mm-hmm. what kind of I'm trying to focus on. Right. And earlier we were talking about the FMEA, which, like I said, I did not find that useful. But as an alternative to FMEA, I would actually recommend to look at what's called DRBFM, which stands for Design Review Based on Failure Modes, which is sort of kind of a FMEA, which is focused on reliability issues. So like if you, let's say you replaced the material or changed the design a little bit, the people get together and kind of look and see, okay, what that change could have entailed. Mm-hmm. And the same thing you can do with when you have a new technology, like, I don't know, radars in vehicles. You get together, you have a reliability engineer, and you have some design engineers, MEs and EEs, and kind of talk to them who understand the technology and design probably a little better than you. Ask them right questions and say, okay, what if I drop that temperature to minus 40. Like, yeah, we have this plastic here, which actually will be pretty hard, and this, what kind of problems would you expect? Or if we go to the other extreme, like, hey, if we go above 100 degrees C or 120 degrees C, what do you expect to happen? So you have the right persons in the room and asking right questions, you can get a lot of good answers, which will help you to basically improve or get the design where you need it to be.
That's true. And I think there's an ideal way to deal with the, before it becomes a product or before it gets built into a product. I think new technologies, and that may be a subject for a whole nother discussion, is if you're working with an advanced laboratory, for example, or a roadmap of new technologies, you have the ability as a reliability professional to influence the development of those, so that many of those questions concerning its durability and its reliability are solved early on, and the long-term studies are started to be done. Once it gets into the product design and once it gets on the record, it's shipping in 6 months, there's very little time left. And knocking off the biggest concerns and the areas with the least margin is about all we really can do. But oftentimes at that point, we have a pretty good idea of what we know and don't know, and can start asking those appropriate questions. So Andre, maybe we'll have to come back and talk about, what if you've got 3 years to deal with this new stuff? You know, it's more nebulous. that might be why don't we just ask if our listeners, are you dealing with stuff that's going to ship this year and you're just up against the gun to figure out where the risks are and what's going to fail and how do you quantify the reliability of it, which I imagine a good number of folks are dealing with? Or are you more focused on the long term, you know, brand new advanced lab type stuff and have more luxury there? Because it's a different set of solutions.
Yeah. If you have time, I mean, you can run experiments and actually learn a lot more about technology and its reliability and acceleration models and all that stuff, as opposed to probably when, if I would take a guess, most of our listeners typically under time pressure where you don't have that luxury, then there's different approaches how to deal with that.
Well, we'll see if we get any questions on that, because I know the long-term part and the basic research phase has problems too. And so it's not a simple solution by any means, because the underlying technology starts changing a bunch. You know, if we run a 6-month test, they may be on generation 3 by then and completely different.
Exactly.
But we'll have to come back and talk about that some other time. No, Andre, I think we just scratched the surface on this one, dealing with the new stuff, but I think it boils down. We summarized it fairly well, so I think we'll leave it to our listeners to see what further on questions we have. So okay. Thanks Great. Much, Andre. We'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, thank you, Fred. Talk to you later.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.